Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We are going to begin our program today by taking a look at green architecture, energy-efficient homes, sustainable homes. And our guest today has had a lot of experience in this area, not only in terms of building homes that are energy efficient, but homes that are homes you want to live in, homes you love to live in. There's a lot that goes into it. Virge Temme, an architect, specializes in sustainable design. She's done it for more than 20 years. She designs certainly some of the most energy efficient homes in the state, recently recognized by Build International magazine as one of the leaders in green architecture in the Midwest. What's your experience with green building or energy efficiency? We'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Just look for The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. And Virge Temme, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Hi. Thanks, Larry. Nice to be back.
Well, let's talk about, well, first, in terms of green architecture, what's your kind of definition of it?
Well, it's really a very broad definition. A lot of people assign a lot of different meaning to it. It can be anything from choosing materials that don't outgas, you know, the fabrics in your home, the glue you use on your carpet, to have no, what people identify as that new home smell, which is actually a volatile organic compound. It's truly a poison in the air.
So that's one aspect.
That's one aspect. Having a healthy home is one aspect. Others are buying materials for your home that are locally sourced, you know, within 500 miles, rather than buying your marble from Italy, for instance, all the way up to some of the most energy-efficient homes on the planet right now, which are anything from passive home to, or passive house, rather, certified passive house, to LEED certified, to a new twist on this, which is called the Living Building Challenge.
Living Building Challenge.
Yeah, that's a tough one to get.
Well, I'm sure we're going to get into that a little bit more. But, you know, you mentioned LEED certified homes, and we hear that term. What does that actually mean?
Well, LEED stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. It's a rating system that was developed by the United States Green Building Council, which, by the way, I have to say, is not part of the U.S. government. But it is now an international rating system. I think it covers almost every country in the world, in the Northern Hemisphere, except Russia and maybe one other. But what it is a holistic approach to building design, taking it every step from the selection of the site all the way through to the very completion of the project and the maintenance of the project afterwards. Deals with the water, deals with how the site's developed, with the materials that are used in the project, with how the energy efficiency rates on the project, all aspects.
Can an existing home become a green home?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I've done quite a number of them. There have been a number of them done across the United States. Some are even LEED homes. And what that entails is making your home or commercial building more energy efficient, again, using locally sourced materials, bringing in more lighting, more natural daylighting, for instance, so you don't have to be turning lights on all the time.
You are a contributor to the book we talked about the last time you were on. It was called Leading the Way, Domestic Architecture for the Future, LEED Certified Green, Passive, and Natural. And I reviewed, looked back through that book again, and I was just looking at how beautiful these homes are, and the ones that are featured from your work are certainly outstanding.
Oh, thank you.
Looking homes that I would think most anyone would want to live in.
Well, you know, there are a lot of myths surrounding green architecture. One of them is that it has to look like some funky sort of futuristic building.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily the truth. I mean, right now we are in architecture, and you're seeing it more and more in the mainstream building design. You're seeing more flat roofs. You're seeing something that looks more like mid-century modern. But that's certainly not what all the homes have to look like. The importance is that the home is energy efficient.
Yeah.
And that it incorporates, you know, healthy living for the inhabitants.
Well, I certainly think it's a great thing to shoot for. Some people would say, well, oh my goodness, this is going to cost me an arm and a leg to do all this.
Oh my gosh, no. No, I mean, certainly it can be as expensive as you want it to be, just as any home can be.
Sure.
But if you choose wisely with your finished materials, with the design of the home, you can actually save money by building green. You know, the bottom line might be 2% more. In fact, there have been a couple of homes that I've designed in the last 5 years that we've carefully monitored the cost of what it would be if we constructed it normally, you know, using typical 2x6 construction like you see everywhere, versus what we do, which is often a double wall construction, super insulated, better heating, ventilation, and air conditioning equipment. And we found that it's anywhere from 0 to 2% more on the bottom line of construction. And yet, it immediately starts saving people money because their energy costs are so low.
Yeah. What kind of energy savings are we talking about here in terms of, I don't know how you define it. Cost is difficult because costs vary, but...
Well, it's kind of interesting because just yesterday... one of the homeowners of the second lead home I did just sent me her energy bills for the last year. They've been living in the home for a year and a half, and last month they just got their very first energy bill of $57. and their energy bill includes water and gas, natural gas, and electricity, $57
for a
year and a half. Oh. And, of course, they have solar panels. And so that certainly makes up part of it. But and they kind of overloaded their solar arrays because they have a Tesla car, and they wanted the array to be large enough that they could actually charge their car.
Oh, my goodness me. Well,
thinking forward on this, there will come a time when they can actually use their car to charge the house whenever there's a power failure. So it works both ways. But couple that I designed for a couple of years ago, they have a 2,600 square foot home, and fortunately, it does have perfect passive solar gain to it. Their average energy bills are $15 a month, and they keep their temperature in their house about 69, 70 degrees. And their highest energy bill ever was $31 rather.
Well, and I don't know what the average is, but I'm thinking about probably $200-$300 a month
easily.
So let's say you're looking at least probably $3,000 a year tied up in that.
Right, and when you stop and think that on say a $300,000 home, you have just spent $6,000 more.
Yeah.
You're already taking care of that cost within the first 2 to 3 years. And from that point forward, you have energy savings and you have money savings. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, even more important is your home is very comfortable. You don't have drafts.
Yeah.
And it just feels right. It's a much quieter home.
And I would think the resale on, you know, who would want to sell? But if you at some point you're probably going to sell, your resale on that would be substantial.
It generally is. You know, of course, you can't say that every single home is going to gain money by doing that. But what the USGBC has found is the homes are generally considered to be about 10% more valuable than a comparable home.
Wow. We have callers online with questions or comments or experiences to share. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's try Barb in Milwaukee first. Barb, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you very much. I've been enjoying your show. I live in Milwaukee, and I was part of the second group of people that purchased solar power through, I think it may have even been as a part of the group from the city of Milwaukee. And the solar power panels, there were about 9 panels put on top of my house, cost me about $18,000. And then I'm finished, and I signed something with Wisconsin Electric Power Company, whatever the...
We Energies? Power
thank you. I signed something with We Energy that they will only give me 10 years worth of credit for my solar power, and then they're going to go and take it back. And I think that's disgusting.
Well, and I think that's a trend, throughout the energy companies all over the United States right now. They're really grappling with how they're going to adjust from coal and gas-powered electrical plants to renewable energies. And they're not quite sure how to do that. The grids are very expensive, and solar and wind are, I don't want to say sporadic, but, you know, they're certainly not as evenly producing as coal and gas. But on top of that, what is happening is so many people are putting solar on their roofs, and so they're not paying as much into the companies, and so the companies don't have as much money. So it's a real issue, and people can't quite figure out what to do. And I just read an article, in fact, yesterday that many of the companies, We Energy included, is looking at microgrids. So that might be something that's coming along in the next few years, too.
Now, what are microgrids?
Microgrids are much smaller grids. Like, the grids that we have right now often encompass several states. These microgrids would only include sections of states. So they don't have to have the very long lines. They don't have to have the gigantic power plants, which are extremely expensive. And it could eventually cut the cost for many consumers.
Very, very interesting. But in the meantime, Barb's stuck.
Right, exactly.
And I'm not sure what to do, but I have no idea what to do other than complain to your own legislature.
Yeah, well, that is true. And actually, if you get online and look at renew.com or renewwisconsin.org, I believe it is, you can see what they're doing too, and they're lobbying very heavily to help homeowners have renewable energies in their home, just like you do.
Yeah, okay, so
RenewWisconsin.org.
RenewWisconsin.org. A place to look, Barb. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Virge Temme, architect. She specializes in sustainable design. She's been doing it for a long time. Recently recognized by Build International magazine as one of the leaders in green architecture in Midwest U.S. So it's great to have her along. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45, we'll be talking about the different land trusts in Wisconsin. So I hope you'll stay with us for that. Right now, taking a look at green architecture with Virge Temme, and lots of folks online to share their experiences and ask questions. So we'll go back to the phones to Tony in Madison next. Hi, Tony. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure thing.
Hi,
what's
Tony.
On your mind?
Roughly 7 years ago, my husband and I designed and built a passive solar home in Cottage Grove. It almost seemed like a no-brainer the more we started learning about it and wondering why more people aren't doing it. For example, yesterday, temperature 30, 40 degrees, which is pretty mild for Wisconsin, but just having all the windows to the south, 312 shed roof going back, it was still 72 degrees in the house, which is quite warm for us to begin with. But when we started the process, we had a really difficult time with financing, just trying to get the idea to banks on building something that is so different, not necessarily different, but out of the cookie cutter norm. And wondering if it has gotten any better, even though it's only been 7 years. But even with builders and designers, we just really found ourselves stuck in many places and needing to do quite a bit on our own. Mm-hmm. They weren't grasping the concept, which I thought was kind of odd. But
yeah, that was probably, you got the house 7 years ago, so probably 8 years ago, maybe that process started, Tony.
Yeah, well, for example, our kitchen, it came from a Taco Bell. So we have 30 running feet of stainless steel, which cost Taco Bell $60,000 to $70,000 to have it built. We bought it used for $1,200.
Oh, that's excellent. And that is so green, what you're doing right there, is repurposing things from other buildings.
Right, but the bank said, well, we can't lend to used materials. So then we had to come up with creative financing to pay for it out of our pocket and then have it reimbursed to us later on as, in a different form. But it just seems so...
Yeah.
See, aren't on...
Yeah.
And what banks are concerned about, of course, is if you foreclose on your mortgage, can they sell the house? Mm-hmm. But I think that what you're going to see, Tony, is as we become more familiar here in the Midwest, because the Midwest is pretty much behind both the coasts. Mm-hmm. All of this is almost commonplace out on the East Coast and especially on the West Coast, and especially in the Pacific Northwest. But it's just kind of coming into the Midwest right now. So, you know, banks are seeing more. Building inspectors are seeing more of this. And I think it's going to become less difficult as time goes on. But I agree with you. The hardest part is for homeowners to help builders understand how to do this. And builders for so long, in fact, one builder that I work with, I think put it very succinctly. It's just fear of change.
Yeah.
And it does take a long time to learn how to do this. In fact, I spent an entire summer just doing research about 10 years ago to see who was doing the most state-of-the-art
work in that area.
Yeah, I guess research in this area. And that's when I stumbled upon LEED and Passive House. But even today, even up here in Door County, which I think is pretty progressive, you know, there are still a lot of builders who look at this and say, oh, you know, it's a nice little niche you carved out, but this is a hoax. It's not a hoax. It's a way that people can save money. Certainly, my main motivation is because it's more environmentally sound to do it this way. I mean, I don't think most people realize that buildings contribute 30 to 40% of the greenhouse gases that are causing these massive climate changes across the world. And if we can reduce the amount of energy that we use, then certainly we're burning less coal, we're burning less gas, you know, all the things that are contributing to carbon and methane and everything else in our atmosphere. Anything that we homeowners can do is what we should be doing.
Just to go along with what Tony was talking about in terms of trouble finding architects, how do you find an architect like yourself? Is there an association, or what do you look for when you're, let's say you want to build a house like this, what do you look for?
Well, the first thing that I would look for is I would contact the United States Green Building Council. They have a list of professionals.
Okay.
Who are certified, who have gone through the LEED process. Now, LEED is not the be-all and end-all, because in my opinion, it doesn't go far enough on energy savings. It goes pretty far, but not far enough. If you get a combination of LEED and Passive House, and Passive House, by the way, was developed by the German government. It was funded by the German government, and it's a software that helps the designer energetically model the building as it's being designed. So you know how much insulation to put in, you know how many windows and doors the building can accept without becoming too cold or too hot. It helps you understand the orientation. So you put those two things together, and you have almost a fail-safe system. So by getting together with FIUS, P-H-I-U-S, .org, and USGBC.org, and finding professionals who work in those areas, you're going to be miles ahead, because there's so much out there. And I know, you know, I work with client after client after client who is just bewildered by all the information that's out there.
Let's, you know what, Jill, I don't know if you've got that up on our Facebook page yet, but we'll put those. So it's FIUS.org, P-H-I-U-S.org, and U.S. Green Building Association.
USGBC.org.
USGBC.org. We'll put those up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, so you can link to them as well. And we have a link to Verge as well on our Facebook page. Tony, I thank you so much for calling.
Absolutely, and congratulations on being so forward-thinking.
Yeah, wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Richard, who's driving from Ontario to Chicago right now. Let's go there. Hi, Richard. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi, Richard.
Hi. What I called about was that a couple of years ago, I had an older house with a mansard roof design. I tore the mansard roof design on. I double-walled it with 6-inch, and then I had an inch and a half styrofoam, so I stuccoed that. It was a flat roof. I couldn't find a good green roof that I liked. I hated the EPM. I hated the tar and gravel. So I did something a bit unusual. I fiberglassed the roof like the hole on a boat. I put down 2x12s, 12 inches apart with 3/4 inch Douglas fir plywood, joined it together. And I find that that roof is perfect. I've had it now for 3 years. There's no leaks. I have a water reservoir system built into it, so it holds 3.5 inches of water and has 12 inches of gravel and soil on top of it, so I can grow whatever I want on top there. It self-waters, plus I have the insulation from that. All of that combined gives me a third the heating bill that I used to have. And I think for future, you might talk to people about fiberglassing the roof like the hull on a boat.
That's
an interesting idea. I haven't heard of anybody doing that before. I know that there are a lot of white-colored EPDMs that people are using now. They're a little bit more expensive than the typical black rubber roofs that you see. But the lighter-colored roofs are less reflective, so they don't create as much heat. I'm curious, Richard, what was your R value in your walls and your ceiling?
The R value on the walls was only 4-inch insulation on it. Then I put a 6 rock wool and then the styrofoam, so it went up to a 50 on the walls.
Oh, that's great.
And approximately the same on the ceiling. I also put up a 10K solar panel unit on top of the roof. You've got my phone number there if you want more details on the fiberglass roof, because it is a learning curve on that. You can't just do it. You know, I did experiments and tested it, and I do have a section of it which is painted white for my solar panels for reflection, which increased it by about 15 to 20%. And right now I'm designing my retirement home, and it's going to be amphibious and should produce about $5,000 a month at 10 cents a kilowatt. That includes methane digesters, algae banks to use the CO2 and so on, so there'll be zero pollution from it while it's producing this electrical energy.
So, what Richard is talking about is a net zero energy home and a net carbon zero energy, net zero carbon home.
Yes, and the home will produce enough food and oxygen and distilled water for 7 people. The idea is that it will supply people with the ability to have the house pay its own mortgage, while if they get laid off or something like that, the house will actually feed them and pay their bills.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's really, really cool, Richard.
Well, and Richard brought up a couple of things, too. He did a double wall construction, and you'll see a lot of that in green architecture. The reason being, a double wall construction will largely eliminate the solar the thermal bridge.
Mm.
And a thermal bridge is the transmission of heat and cold through a wall.
Yeah.
If you just have a 2x6 wall, for instance, with plywood on the outside or OSB, every single stud is going to be bringing hot and cold through that wood. And if you do a double wall construction, there's usually a space in between,
mm-hmm.
Between the outer wall and the inner wall. You fill that whole cavity full of insulation, and then the heat and the cold can't transmit through the wall.
Okay.
It's brilliant.
Is it a lot more expensive to do that?
Not really. Again, you know, like I mentioned earlier, we did an actual analysis on the cost of a home that we finished up last year, and it was less than 2%.
Wow. Oh, well, that's pretty
and that's good. And that's the couple that just got their first $57 bill after a year and a half.
Well, Richard, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you'll shoot me a few photos of your home. I'd love to see what you've done, and maybe you could post that up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. When I know you're driving now to Chicago from Ontario, but I really appreciate your call. Thank you so much. And, boy, there are more callers online. Diane in Eau Claire, your turn next. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. And I really appreciate this subject because it's so important. Anyway, I hired a person, a talented woman in Eau Claire in the early 80s. This was like 81. Up to that time, she had only done retrofits for design, and I wanted a passive solar house. So we had many successes and a couple of failures, and I'll just kind of quickly go over. The house is a two-story, and it was a mass floor, airlocks on the entries.
Mm-hmm.
And the site location, it's on a hill overlooking the Chippewa River, so it's fairly high. And I, the winter before the building started, I made sure I knew exactly where the snow melted completely first,
mm-hmm.
and then that's where the house went.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a foot thick insulation on the roof and the north wall, 6 inches on the other walls. I had there's a sun space, like 2.5 stories sun space on part of the front of the house, and that had 4 big Pella skylights. That was a mistake because it was hot in the summer and cold in the winter because of the angle of the sun.
Right.
I also had one of the bedrooms. You know, I was just enamored with that and had to have it. But we ended up taking out the 4 in the sun space after several years, and instantly the bedroom that was off from that was warmer in the winter, cooler in the summer. It really helped a lot.
Oh, I'm sure.
And the house design had a partial cathedral ceiling, and we used wood and gas backup, and we had a problem with losing a lot of our heat to that plenum up there, and we ended up expanding our living. So the house was built in 82, and then in 2010. We invested in doubling the size of our living room because it was really too small. But I was mm-hmm. afraid financially to, you know, go bigger at that point. Mm-hmm. And because of that mistake with the heat rising to the top, trying to figure out what to do, And I did connect with a solar expert in Eau Claire, or an energy expert in Eau Claire, and what we decided on was to take a pulling motor. So it was taking the heat from the ceiling, mm-hmm. and bringing it. We opened up a wall there, mm-hmm. Bringing that down to the floor, and that new a portion of the living room had kind of a very wide arch, mm-hmm. and with a little bit of ceiling drop of about a foot and a half between the two mm-hmm. rooms, so that heat was brought down.
Brought right down to the floor. I'm going to break in here a little bit for comments from Verge. What do you think?
No, actually, I designed a commercial building in Algoma, Wisconsin. It's called the Flying Pig. I think they're out of business now, but that's exactly the system that we had. They had a greenhouse on the south end of the building, and so all the heat was being captured in the north part of the building. I opened up a 12-foot by 12-foot hole on the second floor. It went up to the roof there, and then we captured all that heat and brought it down to the first floor. And actually, you know, when you start looking at older construction, that's very much what they would do, is they would redirect either through the shape of the ceiling or, you know, through fans. I mean, that's what ceiling fans do, for that matter, is they bring the heat back down. And it sounds like you got very good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we ended up not even heating the other half of the living room, and all portions of the downstairs were warmer with absolutely no increase in our heating cost.
I'll bet.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, the solar homes of, you know, the 1970s and 80s. Yeah, they, you know, God love them. They did their best,
mm-hmm.
and they believed that the more glass you could put on the south side, the better the building was going to be, and that is what we have learned in the decades since, that you really do have to balance, you know, how much heat you're getting into a building and how much cool you're getting into the building or leaving from the building. So that's where things like passive house modeling comes into play.
Yeah, and so it's not just when you talk passive house, it's not just passive.
It's not just passive solar. Passive house is actually a registered name, capital P, capital H.
Okay.
And I know they've been fighting with that, trying to figure out what else they can call it, but that's the name they have. So it is kind of confusing, but it is a system that enables the designer to, like I say, figure out how much insulation you need, how thick the walls need to be, where the windows need to be, how big they need to be. And the nice thing about that, too, is, you know, one of the problems that we run into with super tight energy homes is the amount of humidity.
Yeah.
And so this also analyzes how much humidity, where the dew point's going to be in the wall, so you don't have mold buildup in the wall.
Yeah.
And also in these super tight homes that you need to be able to bring some of the stale air out and bring fresh air in. So we always put energy recovery ventilators up in this area. You're not losing heat that way, but you're bringing in fresh air and you're eliminating the stale air. So that's an important aspect, too. There are a lot of builders that I've heard, even recently, even within the last month or last couple of months, that have said, well, you know, you have to have, you know, some leakage in your windows so you have fresh air. You want to be able to control the leaks that you have in your house. Because most homes have the equivalent of a circle about 40 inches in diameter of leaks throughout the home.
Mm.
Whereas a super tight home might have an overall dimension of about 5 inches of leaks.
That's quite a bit of difference.
It really is, and it makes the home a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, and Diane, I thank you again for sharing that with us. Alan Menominee, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Al.
Oh, I'm just calling one unit. Basically, we're looking at a new countertop for our kitchen island. We're wondering if there's a particular material that's more environmentally friendly. We've got the stove units. We just want to know, replace the laminate top with basic material, something.
Yeah.
Well, the laminates are actually getting better. You know, they've got a different process now. It's a more concentrated heat and pressure system than they had before. And the laminates and so many of the other materials now, the solid surfaces and so on, the quartz, the granites, quartz especially, I think, they use cast-off materials from other stones, grind that up, and then they put that in a resin.
Okay.
And so that's something you might want to look into. It's more affordable than a stone. It's virtually stain-proof.
That's nice.
Yeah,
and it looks nice,
too. You might want to look into, like, a quartz. But then, you know, depending on what your budget is, I wouldn't sway you away from the formicas, you know, the plastic laminates, because they are a different product now than they used to be.
Oh, interesting. Thanks, Al, for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
Judy wondered if the White House has solar panels.
Well, it did. It had solar panels when Jimmy Carter was in, and the first week of office, Ronald Reagan took them off. Maybe we'll get those back on again someday.
Oh, my goodness me. Where do you see this all come, you know, the next? I mean, I think we've come a long way in the last 20 years or so. What about the next, say, 10 years or 20 years?
Well, right now, one of the encouraging things is the states and the federal government have been giving incentives to people to re-insulate their homes, to you know, put better windows in, to put solar panels on, to put better water heaters, et cetera, et cetera. We don't know where that's going. You know, that's kind of a year-to-year guess. Right now, we do have money in the Wisconsin Focus on Energy Plan, and also the federal government gives rebates. I think that this is going to be a ground-up movement. There are so many people who are aware of what's happening in the world. They understand climate change. They see the weather changing. But on top of that, people are wanting the lower energy bills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm seeing a huge trend towards smaller homes, smaller energy bills, and that's a driving force. And, you know, I don't know whether I should share this or not, but during the economic downturn, other architects up in the northeast Wisconsin area were struggling. You know, they had one or two projects a year that were keeping themselves going. And I was talking to a lot of them saying, you know, why don't you reach out and do, you know, take a class, do some energy efficient design, learn how to do that. And they felt that none of their clients wanted that. I, on the other hand, was turning away work because people wanted the energy efficient design.
Yeah.
And I think that we need to really start at a very early age with kids, like in high school. They're going through shop classes and so on, and show them how to build properly. So they're going to be ready when they get out of high school, when they get out of technical college, they're going to be ready to build these homes of the future. And it's, you know, frankly, it's mandated in the European Union right now.
Yeah. Well, lots to talk about here, Virge. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It was really fascinating and interesting to me, and I think to our listener, I'm sure to our listeners as well. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate being back on. Thank you so much, Larry.
Virge Tammy, an architect specialized in sustainable design. She's been doing it for more than 20 years and was recently recognized by Build International magazine as a leader in green architecture in the Midwest. And so it was fun talking with her. We've got the links that she was talking about in terms of if you want to find out some more about the design and how to actually go about doing it or need more information, the U.S. Green Building Association and FIAS.org, a couple of places we have up on our Facebook page, and a link to her pages as well. Fun talking with her. We're going to switch gears a little bit now. There are a number of land trusts in Wisconsin that work to conserve our natural resources. We will talk to two organizations about what these trusts are, their purpose, and how they can be formed. That's next on the Ideas Network.